Now, as regards the second fact I mentioned, this was due to the following events. You must remember that among the learned beings who were then gathered in Babylon from almost the whole planet, some had been brought there by coercion by the aforementioned Persian king, and others had come of their own accord, drawn by that famous question of the soul. And among the beings brought there by coercion, there were some who were not, like the majority, learned beings of new formation, but who, with a sincerity proceeding from their separate spiritualized parts, strove for high knowledge with the sole aim of self-perfection. Owing to their genuine and sincere strivings, to the corresponding manner of their existence, and to their being acts, this small number of beings, even before their arrival in Babylon, had been considered initiates of the first degree by those terrestrial three-brain beings worthy to become all rights-possessing initiates, according to the renewed rules of the most saintly Ashad Ashemash. And thus, my boy, when I began frequenting this club, it became evident to me, both from conversations with its members and from other data, that this handful of terrestrial learned beings who were sincerely striving to perfect their reason had from the beginning kept to themselves in the city of Babylon and never mixed in any of the affairs in which the general mass of Babylonian scholars very soon became involved. This handful of initiated beings kept themselves apart not only in the beginning, when all the others established a meeting place in the very heart of Babylon, where for their better mutual support, both material and moral, they founded a central club for all the learned beings of the earth, but also later on, when the whole body of learned beings split into three separate sections, each having its independent club in a different part of the city, these initiated beings identified themselves with none of the three sections. They existed in the suburbs and scarcely ever met any of the main body of learned beings, and it was only a few days before I was admitted as a member that they united for the first time for the purpose of organizing the club of the adherents of Legomenism. These few learned beings I'm speaking of had all, without exception, been brought to the city of Babylon by coercion, and were for the most part among those taken by the Persian king from Egypt. As I learned later, this union of theirs had been brought about by two learned beings who were initiates of the first degree. One of these two terrestrial initiates, who had his arising among a race of beings called the Moors, was named Camille El Norkel. The other learned initiate was named Pythagoras, who had his arising among the Hellenes, those who were afterwards called Greeks. These two learned beings, as it later became clear to me, happened to meet in the city of Babylon, and during what is called an Oisopagumian exchange of opinions, that is, during one of their conversations, the question arose which forms of being existence conserve the welfare of beings of the future. They came to the conclusion that in the course of changing generations of beings on the earth, a very lamentable phenomenon occurs, namely, that for some reason or other, during the processes of reciprocal destruction called wars and popular uprisings, numbers of initiated beings of all degrees are invariably destroyed, and together with them, there are also destroyed forever many legomenisms, the sole means by which information about former real events on the earth is transmitted and continues to be transmitted from generation to generation. When these two sincere and honest terrestrial beings ascertained what they considered so lamentable a phenomenon. They deliberated a long time and decided to take advantage of the exceptional gathering of so many learned beings in the same city to confer together for the purpose of finding some means of averting at least this distressing phenomenon, which proceeded on the earth owing to the abnormal conditions of the life of man. And it was for this very purpose that they organized that club and called it the Club of the Adherents of Legomenism. So many like-thinking beings at once responded to their appeal that 2 days after my admission, the enrollment of new members was closed. And on the day when new members were no longer admitted, the number enrolled was 139, and the club continued with this same number of members until the Persian king abandoned his craze concerning those terrestrial learned beings. As I learned on joining the club, all the members present on the opening day had organized a general meeting at which it had been unanimously decided to hold a daily general meeting for reports and discussions dealing exclusively with the two following questions. First, what measures should be taken by the members of the club on their return home in order to collect all the legomenisms existing in their native lands and to place them at the disposal of the learned beings of the club? And second, what is to be done in order that the legomenisms might be transmitted to remote generations by some other means than through initiates alone? Before my enrollment as a member, there had already been a great variety of reports and discussions concerning those two questions at their general meetings, and on the day of my admission, a great deal was said on the question of how to attract, for the fundamental task of the club, the participation of initiated beings from among the followers of various paths who were then known as Onenjiki, shamanists, Buddhists, and so on. Well then, it was on the third day after I became a member of this club that there was uttered for the first time that word which has chanced to reach contemporary beings there and which has become one of the potent factors in the final atrophy of all the data still surviving in them for more or less normal logical being mentation, namely the word art, which then had quite another meaning and referred to an entirely different idea. On that day when the word art was uttered for the first time and its exact meaning and underlying idea were established, there was listed among the speakers a Chaldean learned being, very well known in those times, named Aksharpantzizhar. As the report of the venerable Chaldean sage, the great Aksharpantzizhar, was the origin of all the subsequent events relating to that famous contemporary art, I will try to recall his speech and repeat it to you as nearly as possible, word for word. He spoke as follows. Past centuries, and especially the two last ones, have shown us that during those inevitable psychoses of the masses, leading to wars between states and popular revolts within states, it invariably happens that many of the innocent victims of the collective bestiality are those very beings who, owing to their piety and conscious sacrifices, are worthy to become initiates, and through whom various legomenisms containing information about real events that have taken place in the past could be transmitted to the conscious beings of succeeding generations. Just such pious men as these always become the innocent victims of the popular bestiality, because, in my opinion, being already free within, they never wholly identify themselves as all others do, with ordinary interests, and cannot share in the attractions, pleasures, and sentiments, or any other manifestation of those around them, no matter how sincere. Because these pious men exist normally, and in their relations with those around them, are always well-wishing in both their inner and outer manifestations, in ordinary times, they acquire the respect and esteem of everyone. But when the mass of people fall into this psychosis and split into their usual two opposing camps, their reason becomes bestialized by the fighting, and they begin to entertain morbid suspicions of just these men who in normal times have always been unassuming and serious. And if the attention of those afflicted with this psychosis happens to rest a little longer than usual on these exceptional men, they then have no doubt whatever that these serious and outwardly quiet beings have, even in normal times, been neither more nor less than spies for their present enemies. With their diseased reason, these brutalized men categorically conclude that the seriousness and quietness of these beings were simply secrecy and duplicity. And no matter to which hostile party they belong, the result of their psychopathic conclusions is that without any remorse of conscience whatsoever, they put these serious and quiet men to death. This, it seems to me, is the most frequent reason why, in the course of their transmission from generation to generation, the legomenism about events that really took place on this planet are totally disappearing from the face of the earth.